From the state capitol, WFSU Public Media brings you Capitol Report.
An organization supporting transgender people in Tallahassee has gotten national attention.
I think it's really, really important, and I think they're absolutely amazing.
Also this week, Governor DeSantis signs a bill into law ramping up penalties for interfering with law officers.
People come trying to interdict or trying to harass you from performing your duty.
We'll also delve into some of the other latest bills signed into law by Governor DeSantis, and we'll explore an ancient way of looking at the world that could be used to address some very modern problems. I'm Tom Flanagan. Online and on air, this is Capitol Report and the end-of-week wrap-up of top stories from Tallahassee. Last year, after the Florida legislature passed several laws restricting rights for transgender people, many members of the community said they no longer felt safe, and some even left the state. But as Regan McCarthy reports, in Tallahassee, one transgender woman is working to build a system of community and support.
It's a Saturday night at the Rose Room in Tallahassee, and drag queen Vache Aviance is about to get the evening's entertainment started. But first,
I need a drink and a burger.
Vache Aviance is the alter ego of Janelle Diaz, an LGBTQ plus advocate and the founder of Capital T, an organization that provides services for transgender people, including a safe house, job search assistance, and referrals to legal aid. It's one of the few places in North Florida offering help specifically for transgender people. Diaz started it after she couldn't find the support she needed during her own transition.
It should not make you angry how I'm living my life. And I think that's what makes me want to fight so much more for the cause, for my organization, you know, like Capital T being here in the Bible Belt.
Last year, the Florida legislature passed several laws restricting transgender rights, banning gender-affirming care for most minors, and reducing access to care for adults. Another law requires people to use bathrooms that match their sex assigned at birth in some government buildings. And another measure barred children from adult live performances, such as drag shows. Republican Governor Ron DeSantis said the measures were about letting, quote, kids be kids.
There's a lot of nonsense that gets floated around, and what we've said in Florida is we are going to remain a refuge of sanity and a citadel of normalcy, and kids should have an upbringing that reflects that.
Opponents call the laws a slate of hate, endangering an already vulnerable group. Several of the measures have been temporarily blocked by the courts, but Diaz says the damage has already been done.
Even before the legislation and even before the laws, it was already still tough. But now it just makes it even worse, you know?
Diaz says she's proud to be the transgender woman she is today, but she wasn't always comfortable with herself.
So for me, being able to do drag was just like, at first, it actually was an outlet for me to kind of like express my true self, because I wasn't yet transitioned yet.
Diaz remembers seeing celebrity drag performer RuPaul on TV back in the 90s, the first time she'd ever seen a drag queen.
I was like, oh my God, like, wow, can I do that? Can I do this?
Earlier this year, Diaz had a full circle moment when an organization called the Rainbow Book Bus, backed by RuPaul, partnered with Capital T to bring a traveling book fair to Tallahassee, offering books that had been targeted for bans in some Florida schools. Adam Powell is the executive director of the Rainbow Book Bus. He heard Diaz speak last year when her organization received a grant from Way Out, an organization supporting LGBTQ plus youth, and he was excited to meet her.
To support work and spotlight the work that Janelle's doing, because I think it's really, really important, and I think they're absolutely amazing.
Diaz hopes to expand Capital T to open more safe houses throughout the region.
I'm actually really hopeful and excited for what tomorrow is going to bring. I am. I really, really am.
Diaz hopes it will be her legacy. I'm Regan McCarthy in Tallahassee.
In an effort to back the blue, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis has signed two new bills into law that he says will help protect law enforcement. Adrian Andrews has the details.
During a bill signing ceremony at the St. John's Sheriff's Office in St. Augustine, Governor Ron DeSantis said he wanted to thank police officers across the state for their hard work over the years. He also gave his official okay to two new laws that protects first responders in a society that DeSantis says doesn't always respect the work of law enforcement.
We've got some strange currents going on in our society right now that really seek to delegitimize law enforcement and what they're doing.
The first bill, Senate Bill 184, creates space between Florida's first responders and the general public. Firefighters, EMTs, and police officers are covered under the law, and it prohibits a person from approaching them while they perform certain tasks. This includes rendering aid or even making an arrest. The law requires all pedestrians to keep a distance of 25 feet or more from the responding officer or first responder. DeSantis warns anyone who breaks this law could face hefty penalties.
You shouldn't be in a situation where you're at a traffic stop, you're responding to a call of someone in distress, and then you have people come trying to interdict or trying to harass you from performing your duty. So if you do that, you know, we view that as a problem, and now you're going to be held accountable.
Violators of Florida's new safe distancing law could face fines up to $500 and spend 60 days in jail. Opponents have raised concerns that the law could prevent bystanders from capturing video of police officers who may be using unnecessary force. Such videos have been instrumental in holding officers accountable in recent cases throughout the country. The second measure comes from Jacksonville Republican Representative Wyman Dugman, who filed HB 601 during this past session. DeSantis signed the measure into law Friday, limiting what citizen police oversight boards can do. Dugman says the newest law keeps law enforcement from being mistreated by the public.
They can still meet. They can still talk about policy, procedure, training, culture, systemic issues. But what they cannot do is use them as a vehicle to persecute our law enforcement officers.
The provision keeps citizen review boards established by local governments from investigating alleged police misconduct. It was a controversial topic during the legislative chamber as majority Democrats voted it down. Representative Diane Hart of Tampa believes the measure strips away Floridians' right to voice their opinions about police wrongdoing.
We want to take away all the rights of our regular citizens who we believe should be able to serve on some of these boards as oversight. There are no real oversights inside of our prison facilities.
The distancing provision goes into effect January 1st of 2025. Meanwhile, changes to the state's 21 citizen police review boards will go into effect this July. I'm Adrian Andrews.
Private insurers pulled more than 275,000 policies last year from the state's citizens' property insurance and have taken nearly 115,000 so far this year. Citizens, which was created as an insurer of last resort, ballooned during the past few years to become the largest insurer in the state as private carriers dropped customers and raised rates because of financial troubles. But after the legislature approved a series of changes to try to bolster the market, private insurers have again started taking on policies. State leaders have long sought to minimize the number of policies in Citizens, at least in part because of financial risks if the state gets hit by a major hurricane or multiple hurricanes. Tim Serio is the president of Citizens.
It's very promising what we're seeing. New capital is coming into Florida. Citizen sizes trending downward, which of course reduces our exposure.
Citizens reached as many as 1.41 million policies in fall of 2023 before seeing reductions because of the depopulation program. Nevertheless, Citizens still remains the state's largest insurer with just over 1.17 million policies. Coming up on Capitol Report, Florida has a new law imposing harsher penalties on those convicted of retail theft.
We care more about protecting public safety and the rights of law-abiding citizens than we do about coddling criminals or making excuses for them.
More and more Florida seniors are finding a place to live less and less affordable.
I think the cost of living has gone up dramatically.
The opioid crisis remains a crisis, although a Medicaid expansion in places like Florida is being touted as a powerful tool to help the fight.
One of the problems being that many people avoid going to treatment because they can't pay for it.
And some ancient Native American wisdom may be the best way to deal with some very modern problems.
Our traditions have this great honoring of the land, the air, the plants, the animals.
Governor Ron DeSantis has given his okay to a new law creating harsher penalties for retail theft. Tristan Wood reports that data shows the governor and politicians across the political spectrum may have oversold the frequency of retail theft.
Florida's new legislation cracks down on organized retail theft, making it a third-degree felony to commit theft in a group of five or more individuals, and a second-degree felony if criminals use social media to solicit others to participate. DeSantis says the effort is an attempt to crack down on criminals and keep retail theft numbers down in Florida.
We're law and order state. If you do the crime, you're going to do the time. We care more about protecting public safety and the rights of law-abiding citizens than we do about coddling criminals or making excuses for them.
The governor had backed the measure for months before officially signing it. And frequently, he has incorrectly referenced data, giving an inflated impression of the scale of retail theft. During the press conference this week, he said that retail theft in America reached $112 billion last year. That number came from the National Retail Federation, and wasn't just retail theft, but also included retail shrink. Reed Hayes, University of Florida criminologist and director of the Loss Prevention Research Council, says shrink includes all the ways businesses lose product.
You know, it's partly error. Hey, just lost it. It's misplaced. It's not where it's supposed to be. Turns out we've got three trucks out there somewhere with it we didn't think about. Part of it is employee dishonesty. You know, they steal it themselves or help some kind of collusion. And then, of course, there could be external theft, you know, shoplifters or burglars at night or something like that.
In the Retail Federation's numbers, retail theft only accounted for $40 billion of the $112 billion in losses it says retailers experienced last year. National retail theft numbers are only a drop in the bucket compared to the industry's revenue. Last year, America's retail industry made $7.7 trillion in revenue, meaning they sold 192 times more product than the goods they lost to retail theft. Hayes says how much a retailer is targeted by retail theft largely depends on the type of goods it sells.
On average, a retailer might say 30% of my loss is due to external theft. But if the major part of, let's say most of the participants are not furniture stores where maybe it's only 10%, maybe the majority are drug and other stores and maybe it's 40 or 60%.
During the bill signing ceremony, DeSantis contrasted Florida with states like California and New York for how they have handled retail theft. Fellow conservative Governor Greg Abbott has also frequently attacked Democrat-controlled states and cities over the issue. But Democrats have also utilized retail theft crackdown rhetoric, says University of Southern Maine criminologist Brendan McQuaid. New York Governor Kathy Hochul backed a $45 million plan last month to target retail theft. McQuaid says he thinks the increased focus on retail theft is due to a shift in how politicians and the media have covered crime issues since the George Floyd protests.
There's kind of a public turn towards law and order, lots of anxiety around issues of urban disorder, unhoused people, substance use. You know, I think this type of rhetoric has some purchase in this cultural moment in the political moment, and the retailers are using it to their advantage.
McQuaid argues that retailers are also helping to pump the shoplifting narrative to overshadow industry challenges after the COVID-19 pandemic, like understaffed stores and the shift to digital commerce.
theft is kind of a blameless issue, right? Theft doesn't tarnish the management the way mismanaging inventory or merchandising decisions or, you know, staffing decisions doesn't fix them in the same way.
Florida's new law will take effect on October 1st. I'm Tristan Wood.
Shelters for unhoused people are seeing more and more seniors on fixed incomes. As Margie Menzel reports, the reasons include the lack of affordable housing and the rising costs of rent and of staying in their own homes.
The Kearney Center in Tallahassee has a capacity of 450. It had been averaging about 230 residents, but over the last 6 months, it's increased to 330. About 53% of the residents are aged 45 or older.
We have right at 100 clients that are over the age of 65. So that aging population that we're seeing, God bless them, this is not what they signed up for.
That's Kearney Center Executive Director Sonia Wilson.
These are people that have worked their whole life.
Wilson attributes their numbers in the shelter to the lack of affordable housing, sometimes due to disability, and the rise in property insurance and property taxes.
Their checks haven't went up to sustain them within their housing that they currently have. So they're ending up here at the shelter, no fault of their own, but they simply can't afford, whether it be the taxes and the insurance on a mortgage that puts them out, or an apartment that the rent goes up. They can no longer sustain that. So they find themselves here.
In South Florida, where housing is even harder to come by, Max Rothman is the president and CEO of the Alliance for Aging. He says living on a fixed income is a huge driver of seniors losing their housing.
Well, undoubtedly, and including some that perhaps aren't even on a fixed income, but that's certainly a critical factor. I think the cost of living has gone up dramatically. Inflation factor, mental health issues, the lack of affordable housing, all of these things contribute to challenges.
Last year, the Alliance for Aging received 1,784 calls to its helpline, specifically about housing.
A lot of the ones that we hear are simply, they got a rent increase and they can't afford it.
At the same time, he says, gentrification is driving people out of their longtime homes.
When we talk about increasing costs, places like Little Haiti, Wynwood, they've been going through gentrification. So that drives up the rentals, and older people simply can't afford them.
Rothman says a second wave of baby boomers, born in the mid-50s to the mid-60s,
who are retiring or can't work anymore for one reason or another, and they're beginning to show up much, much more in our system. What that suggests is that this problem isn't going away in the short term. It's been increasing for years, and I think we'll be experiencing it for some years to come.
According to the Florida Aging Statistics and Resource Guide, 27% of the state's population is aged 60 or older. 13% of seniors aged 65 or older are living alone. The median household income for a Florida senior is $42,600. For non-seniors, that figure is nearly $68,000. I'm Margie Menzel.
Drug overdose deaths in Florida have dropped slightly, but the state's fentanyl crisis is still killing thousands of residents a year. Safe and effective opioid addiction treatments are available, but they're not easy to get. WUSF's Stephanie Colombini explores how expanding Medicaid could help.
It's been a long time since Suzanne was addicted to heroin, but the 53-year-old health worker still remembers feeling scared and helpless. She describes it like being underwater, trying to swim to the surface, but stuck.
It was crazy. It was awful. You'd do it, and then the next thing you know, not to be sick, you'd have to find more. You know what I mean? So you have to go out on the street where you don't want to go. You just never know what you're going to get.
We're not using Suzanne's last name because her employer doesn't know that for the past couple decades, she's been in drug treatment. She takes methadone to prevent withdrawal symptoms like vomiting and joint pain, and to reduce drug cravings without making her feel high. She also gets counseling to tackle the mental health challenges that can fuel addiction.
I don't think I'd have a steady job or a life or even made it this far without the program.
Methadone and a similar drug, buprenorphine, are also opioids. But research shows when taken as prescribed, they can curb illicit use of drugs like fentanyl and reduce overdose deaths by about 50%. And yet, just 1 in 5 people with opioid use disorder receive these medications for treatment. There are a lot of access barriers, says Dawn Jackson. She directs the clinic where Suzanne goes in Citrus County. The area was hit hard by the opioid crisis, but residents had to travel to other counties to get methadone until the clinic opened last fall.
We need to do more to help people get into treatment and stay in treatment. That's where it begins and ends.
Transportation hurdles, strict regulations, and hesitancy about these treatments keep people from care. Insurance is another issue. Some policy experts like Brendan Saloner with Johns Hopkins University say expanding Medicaid is one way to help. That's been an option for states since 2014 under the Affordable Care Act.
The immediate effect was that a huge group of people with substance use disorder got insurance cards for the first time.
Saloner has studied how expansion tackles problems with addiction treatment.
One of the problems being that many people avoid going to treatment because they can't pay for it. So people with a Medicaid card have a new way of paying for care.
Some research shows expanding Medicaid helped more people access drugs like buprenorphine. Other studies suggest it can reduce opioid hospitalizations. Insuring more people with low incomes also helps some treatment providers in expansion states save money on charity care. But Florida is one of 10 states that hasn't expanded coverage. Suzanne says she didn't realize that when she moved to Citrus County from Massachusetts to care for her dad.
I just can't believe the health care down here.
Suzanne had Medicaid in Massachusetts but didn't qualify in Florida. So she was uninsured for more than a year, all while struggling to pay rent and find a full-time job. The out-of-pocket cost for her methadone and counseling was a little over $100 a week, and that was too much. Dawn Jackson at the Citrus Clinic says a lot of clients are in a similar position.
It may not seem like a lot to some, but for others, it's life-changing to have to spend that kind of money to get well.
Jackson works with the addiction treatment nonprofit Operation PAR. It administers methadone and buprenorphine to nearly 4,000 patients along Florida's Gulf Coast. Most are on Medicaid or don't have health insurance. The group uses state and federal grants to help people who can't pay. So Suzanne was able to get her methadone for just $21 a week. But she had other problems. Suzanne has diabetes and was off her insulin. Sometimes she says her blood sugar got dangerously high.
It could kill me. It could put me in a diabetic coma, you know, if I go any higher.
Many people who've struggled with addiction have other physical and mental health problems. Supporters of Medicaid expansion say coverage helps people address those needs too, and that's important for recovery. Florida has resources for uninsured residents that could have helped Suzanne, but she didn't know that. Her eyes welled with tears as she vented her frustration to Jackson, who vowed to help.
Yeah, we're going to get it. You know me. I'm like a bad cold. I'm easy to catch and hard to get rid of. Somebody's going to get her insulin.
Shortly after, Suzanne learned she could get insurance through her job. Her plan kicked in this year, and she's back on insulin. Her insurance doesn't cover her methadone treatment at Operation PAR, so they're using grant funding to keep her costs down while they can.
They're very nice and they're very caring, and it's hard to find, you know what I mean?
Many Florida lawmakers don't want to expand Medicaid, but the state is investing millions to help more people get addiction treatment. Advocates for expansion acknowledge it won't solve the drug crisis, but they say it's an important strategy states can't afford to ignore. I'm Stephanie Colombini in Tampa.
Florida had a wetter than normal winter last year. But state officials are advising people to prepare for drier conditions that will increase the chances of wildfires this year. Last year, with limited rainfall, dry brush, and downed trees from Hurricane Ian, Florida recorded more than 2,600 wildfires that burned over 101,000 acres. Drought conditions required several counties to issue burning bans and prohibit burning yard debris. The Division of Emergency Management lists the current threat of wildfires across the state as low, but Agriculture Commissioner Wilton Simpson says people should limit debris on their properties as wildfire season begins.
Prepare your home regularly by clearing your roof and gutters of debris. Prepare your yard by creating and maintaining a defensible space buffer around your home. Be smart and vigilant if burning yard waste.
So far in 2024, the Florida Forest Service has responded to 518 fires affecting nearly 8,200 acres. The state had significant fires during the past week in Pensacola and Martin County. However, the rainy winter allowed the agency to conduct prescribed burns that reduce kindling that feeds wildfires. You're listening to Capitol Report from WFSU Public Media. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally this week, the world is certainly full of problems, things like climate change, toxic politics, air and water pollution, and unrestrained growth seem like insurmountable challenges. But Dr. Daniel Wildcat believes there's hope and even possible solutions.
Everyone's heard the apocryphal quote attributed to Einstein. There's no evidence he ever said it, but it goes something like this. You can't fix problems with the same kind of thinking that created them. I think we're at a great opportunity here to explore people who think differently about the world.
Daniel Wildcat is a professor at the Haskell Indian Nations University in Lawrence, Kansas. He is himself a member of the Yuchi and Muscogee tribes. He also has a great deal of respect for the similar worldviews espoused by a tribe that calls Florida home.
What I like about my own indigenous traditions and the indigenous traditions of the Seminole, I think we have an appreciation for our human place in the balance of creation.
Whereas the prevailing Western culture looks at nature as a force to be overcome, Wildcat says the thinking of indigenous Americans believes in the principle that everything in nature, including people, are interconnected in profound ways.
I think indigenous traditions call on this idea that we're part of a larger community, and that community is the ecological systems that we are a part of. So our traditions have this great honoring of the land, the air, the plants, the animals.
So before we address the issue of climate change, Daniel Wildcat believes people must first undergo a culture change.
What happens if we rechange that and say, you know, really we're relatives in a larger life system, an ecosystem, and maybe the question we haven't asked ourselves is, are we being good relatives to the balance of life? That really is probably the most fundamental message I would share.
Dr. Daniel Wildcat, noted Native American thinker, author, and educator, spoke today before an audience of engineers, emergency managers, social workers, children's advocates, and indigenous studies scholars at Tallahassee's Innovation Park. Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Adrian Andrews, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, Margie Menzel, and Tristan Wood. Thanks also to Stephanie Colombini. Technical support for Capitol Report comes from Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. We hope you'll join us again next week on air and online for more reports from the state capitol.
Capitol Report is a production of WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee.